Hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another episode of The Vagabond Dilemma featuring me, and my epic co-host, Rudy. On today's episode, Rudy tells us about the gay lore of the world, while Henry takes us on a couple of made-up stories with a bit of a twist to them. Without further ado, please enjoy the episode.
I impaled myself today.
Impaled?
There was a humongous, like, mind-splitting, cheek-slapping splinter, and I impaled my hand on it. I can actually prove it. You can see here.
Wait, how did this happen?
In Atlas! In our canteen of our university. Somehow, from one of the tables, like, the laminated wood, somehow it, like, on one side of it,
ooh,
on one side, was, like, barely noticeable. It was, like splitting off, not fully off yet, but splitting off. And I didn't see it, and I was just wiping the table off with my, and you can understand already.
Oof.
So, yeah, I mean, honestly, my pretty hands, for once I was like, I'm gonna do the dirty work. I'm gonna take the crumbs off the table, because I was a gentleman, I was sitting with a lady. This is what I get. Could never. Because I'm not supposed for this work. This is usually like men's work.
For this work.
Why do you need straight men in this world and not for this?
For cleaning tables? Or for getting hurt specifically?
For doing my dirty work and getting hurt by me.
Right.
My biggest fantasy.
Okay. Weird, I guess, but fine.
Welcome to the Vagabond Dilemma, the only podcast where you hear all about Rudy's fantasies with straight men.
Right. So, we pick an explorer, we talk about them, we come to a resolution, and then we hear the actual resolution. Just to finish the intro.
And just so everybody's sure of this, I know that the last episode was about a mountain climber. But trust me on this. And check it out by yourself. But trust me on this. I implore you. This podcast is not just about mountain explorers.
Yes, we have heard your feedback. I saw the inbox. Can you quit it with the fucking mountain climbers? I apologize. This was the last time. What?
When we first made this podcast, and I made the pitch for it, and then I kept like blasting everybody on Instagram about it.
Right.
And I never mentioned it that way. I always said it's about explorers, it's about, you know, improv comedy. It's all the words I used. I never said the word mountain climbers. But our first episode was about a mountain climber. And one person was, I was talking with them quite shortly after we started the podcast. Another person joined our chat and he asked, so Rudy, you have a podcast, what's it about? And the other guy, the one I was talking to prior, he was kind of like, I can just do this for you. You know, he just started. I was like, oh yeah, he's like, it's basically in a nutshell, it's improv comedy, but only about mountain climbers. But he didn't use the word mountain climbers, which is why this story is funny to me. He used the word escalators, because he couldn't remember the word mountain climbers, and in his head, it's kind of like, I don't know, I guess I see why an escalator as a word would be, like, you would think it's somewhat similar to, because you're scaling a mountain, right?
Right.
But yeah, so allegedly there is a small ongoing joke between me and somebody that I am making a podcast about escalators.
An improv comedy podcast about escalators. That sounds like a real banger.
And dumbass, if you're listening to this episode... Oh, wait. Nah, I'm gonna name drop. They're not listening.
Alright, it's fine, I guess. No censoring for this one time.
No. You can put over his name, though, like, I'll give you samples. Dumbass, dipshit, muppet, knob, individual, idiotic, scum.
Okay, I will just, like, leave it as what it was. I will just leave it as what it was. It's fine. I mean, I don't know. I also didn't really want the first episode to be a mountain climber, but I also...
I like it. Why not?
No, I mean, I don't think it's bad, but I was imagining our first episode to be something like the classic, oh, they're out at sea and they get lost. But I just picked someone. Oh, that's cool. I've never heard of him.
He's from Korea. Sounds cool. Let's do it. Oh, I don't know what Annapurna 1 is. Let's get it. And then it turns out that's just a mountain climber. It was still fun. It was still one of my favorite people to research, to be honest. But it was also a bit of a non-traditional one, let's say, to start off with.
Yeah, definitely. But I liked it,
you gotta start somewhere. Am I right,
Rudy? Other people liked it too, so we did something right, didn't we?
Yes.
That being said, though, nice segue, Henry. Props to you about good stories. Everybody loves good stories, especially I do. In this art of storytelling, where I am quite of a finesser, you know?
Is this going to be an episode that I have to edit a lot again?
I'm going to be honest, if you would at some point, whenever you feel, or even maybe throughout the whole story of mine, just had like thematic background music.
That I have to find myself?
Yes, but only if you want. And it's not, I don't want any specific sound events, just to set up the theme.
Have you ever
noticed, by the way, that in the initial episodes where I edited, once in a while I did put random sound effects in?
Yeah, I did.
And it was like the most, even to me, I was like, why am I doing this? Like, literally, like, 40-minute episode. And then randomly in some episodes, for like 5 seconds, I add, like, I think trumpets here would sound nice.
I mean, I just remember you said that you would try it, but then you also said at some point, like, it's too much work for something small, right?
Well, that's not necessarily how I wanted to go about it, because in reality, I think it was worth it, but it was just, I'm gonna be real. Making a non-sponsored podcast means we always have to use
royalty-free
music, and when sometimes you like, whenever I have an idea about a sound effect, it's always something very like, oh, this is really good. It would like be top of the notch here, but it's very specific, and usually the thing I want to find is either non-existent as like just a sound. Or it's not royalty free.
Yeah.
Some of it we even like skimmed. I'm pretty sure that I think in one of the episodes we, I don't remember where it was, where I did the Can-Can, my own like version of Can-Can.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Can-Can is old enough to be royalty free and be used. Because I did my research on it. But some sources do list that if you do the version of a specific orchestra doing the Can-Can, it's the property of that orchestra. So I tried to get the whatever is named as the generic version of it.
But isn't it fine because we parodied it anyway, in a sense?
It should be fine, but you know how it is nowadays.
Well, no copyright strikes yet, so this one's for Disney, and I'll just leave it to Rudy to
see this. Of course, because Disney is the proprietor owners of Can-Can.
No, I mean, just like Disney in general, these ones are for you.
Oh, yeah, and for those who like to the me visualizing things or talking about things segment, this was Henry flipping to a
Disney? Yeah!
Now Henry is trying to show his fingers up Disney's ass, but...
But he's not succeeding. What a shame. That would have been great video content. You want to do a video episode at some point?
Yes, I'd love to.
Really?
I would actually love to.
I don't know, that's a real toughie, I will say. Editing-wise, that's going to be a challenge.
Don't edit it, just leave it as is. Great stories is where we were. Great stories.
Great segue. The world,
yes, true. But the thing is, I mean, I talked about this before, I cannot stress enough, how much of the world, how much of its morale and hope is brought up and held up by stories. And it goes... This tradition of ours, as humanity, as humankind, goes way back when. Way back when. Way more back when you would think way back when. So let me set a scene now.
Yeah.
So picture it. Mesopotamia. Approximately.
Uh-huh. Oh.
Yes?
I forgot my notebook.
Oh my god. I'm gonna go on with this.
Go on.
So yeah. Picture it, Mesopotamia, approximately 2700 BC, the cradle of civilization. The world is still wild, beautiful, and savage. Yet at the same time, there are some advanced civilizations making their way in, slithering about. that have learned to coexist within the turmoil of nature versus man. And just to put it in perspective, we are talking about people with no real understanding of anything outside their city-state at the time borders.
It's me.
True, very true. And by the way, after which said borders, right? There are still animals out there, like the saber-toothed cats, the giant sloths, the woolly mammoths. This is the time where those animals are still around, which is actually pretty hard. It kind of boggles my mind. Think about it. The ancient Egyptians lived in the same time when woolly mammoths were.
Really? That, like, recent? I thought them mammoths died, like, long, long ago.
No. The mammoths actually are somewhat of a recent thing.
So how did they die?
Extinction?
Yeah, but how?
They choked and died. Global warming, I don't know.
Alright.
Not the point! Anyways,
well, you made a big, pretty big point out of it. Sorry, so I really hate to interrupt.
It's fun times, is what I'm trying to say with the woolly mammoths.
All right, noted. Of course, not in Mesopotamia. Mammoths.
Yeah. And it was, as it has been since the beginning of time, world needed what, Henry?
Where's Mesopotamia again?
Mesopotamia?
Yeah.
It's where modern day. I think somewhere like around like Iraq? Iraq, Iran, yeah.
Yeah, okay, sorry, I was thinking right then. My bad.
Yes.
What did the world need, is what you're asking?
Yes.
Bronze.
Heroes.
All right, well, I try.
Or rather, stories of some, so they have something to look up to. Because, right. You know, it's still the land of gods back then, the pantheon and whatnot. Well, actually, the pantheon as we know it from the Roman or Greek culture is ways back to go still, but the pantheon of Mesopotamia. So talking about Mesopotamia, there is one such tale that till this day is revered and cited within the storytelling folk. Can you tell me one hero from Mesopotamia that everybody knows?
Babylon.
Was a city.
The king of Babylon. Perseus.
I like the way you're thinking about the king of something.
The horse of Troy.
No, Mesopotamia was before that, buddy. It's
yeah, but like this was just
BC.
A horse called Troy.
No.
I don't know. The king of Egypt.
Ever heard of Sumeria?
No.
Ever heard of the city-state by name Uruk?
No.
Ever heard of a Chad named Gilgamesh?
I know the name Gilgamesh.
Exactly, and that's the point. That's how you know it's a good story. You don't know who the fuck that is. You don't know his story, but you know the name Gilgamesh.
So true.
Actually, tell me, what do you know about Gilgamesh?
I literally just know the name, and that it makes me vaguely think of, like, Zelda games. Even though that's, like, not related at all.
That's not kind of what I expected to hear, I guess. Yes?
There's a Sonic Riders level in Babylon. Like, that's vaguely related. That's about the most you can get out of me for this.
I'm gonna put this, you know, like, I thought of this today in a specific manner. Mm-hmm. Because it's 2700 BC, and nowadays folk, we're like, you know, the fashion's changed a bit. We talk has changed a bit. The mathematics, just a smidge. So I would try to modernize the story, summarize it, put it in the native tongue of nowadays folk, right? So I'll get into it. And this is, by the way, I read all the 12 tablets of the Epic of Gilgamesh on Wikipedia page, the translated versions, because this is how they got the story. And so...
It's pretty crazy, that they already had, like, tablets. Like, they already had iPads back then. That's, like, technology.
That's wild.
Yeah,
it's crazy. It's crazy. I think back then they were, like, something Sumerian version. Like, not iPads. It probably would have been, like, iPods. No.
Yeah, that's so true. Back in the day, am I right?
Back in the day, it's all just another day of the races, so...
Truly.
I mean, we all know Americans are not original, so... You think iPad just was, you know... Steve Jobs just decided to call that...
Right. Why do you think they went to a war in Iraq? Yeah, it's to retrieve the tablets. Yeah.
Oh, true. Anyhow, we have a lot to cover, so I'm going to move on. King, sorry.
It's all right.
So anyhow, Gilgamesh was what we in the business would nowadays call a massive Chad.
Okay.
Muscles like mountains, looks of a demigod, and arrogance aplenty.
Like you, like minus the muscles.
I'll allow it for now. This comment. And that same arrogance goes hand in hand with selfishness. Got it, isn't it? Anyhow, yes, the legendary king, at least at the start of his story, was described to be too proud, even more arrogant, and a borderline tyrant to his people. He wasn't a nice person at all. The city-state of Uruk, which he governed, was suffering under his rule. And so the people weep and plead to the gods for salvation. And guess what? The gods decide to act on it. However, them being gods and all, they could not just get rid of Gilgamesh, because, you know, that would be way too easy, non-dramatic. Gods don't do that. Instead, they... guess what they did?
I thought Gilgamesh was the hero.
No, but, you know, gods tried to teach them a lesson. What will gods do with a hero?
They're going to cut his feet off and tell him, you can't walk anymore, bud.
That would have been more logical than what they actually did.
They're going to fuck his wife?
I would say, he didn't have a wife at this point, as far as I know. But I would say, if you later I'm going to come back to this, if you would say fuck over his wife, I would agree with that sentence. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
So instead, they create a wild man, quote unquote, called Enkidu. To humble Gilgamesh.
Right.
And this wild man at the beginning of his story is literally, as they describe, like, I just picture him as a yeti. Because he's described as, like, you know, all hair but a humanoid walking in the wilds, you know, basically being a savage. But at first the two do not meet each other and don't know other's existence. But the wild man is later found by, I think, some peasants or something who are trying, like, they teach him how to behave like a human. They shave off the hair. He's basically integrated into society. In, you know, Sumerian whatever society that was. And so Enkidu slowly becomes part of the back then quote-unquote modern society, am I right? And at some point their paths cross. And what happens then? They fight. And what happens after that? Very logical outcome, by the way. Obviously they both recognized each other's strengths and became greatest of friends. And some sources even suggest, because the way their friendship, quote-unquote, is described on most of, like, those true transcriptions, they hold hands and kiss each other once in a while. Great friendship is that, huh? So you know where I'm getting with this fucking over his wife, if he had one.
Right.
My brother's gods just turned him gay.
Right.
This is the original curse of the gay. This is where it started.
Okay.
You heard it from here first. The OG Giga Chat started gays. Couldn't be more proud. Real daddy hours.
Happy for you, King.
Exactly. So now this dynamic duo, instead of a solo act, the pair embarks on a multiple legendary adventures, some of which are crucial to the character development, blah, blah, blah. So I'll quickly summarize them. I have, like, points made. So let's go one by one. And some of these are... I'm gonna be honest, like... I have read some of those old manuscripts about, like, you know, translated, of course, the Egyptian stories, the Greeks. Some of them, everybody knows, like, they get pretty wild. Especially, you know, like, you heard of the stories from Greek gods, like Athena came in full armor out of Zeus's head when it got split open, that kind of weird shit. When I was reading some of these Sumerian stories, they just on some other crack, brother. Some of these are just... I try to modernize them or sometimes take out of the context and be like, oh, I guess it makes sense this way, but the way they describe it, it's like, what the fuck? So let's just go into it. The first one. They venture to the cedar forest to kill the monstrous demigod Humbaba to gain fame and renown. So it's just, you know, my brother's arrogance growing. Whilst the city council and Enkidu advised Gilgamesh against such ventures, he could not be deterred. True to his word, he and Enkidu did succeed in killing Humbaba and his 7 sons. However, not without relying upon each other for encouragement and strength in battle. That shook mountaintops and turned the skies black. And after that, I didn't write this down, but I did read it. They cut, I believe, 100... No, that was in a later legend. they basically pillage the cedar forest by cutting down a lot of trees. They cut the most, like, the biggest tree, just because I think Enkidu wanted to make some kind of gate for a temple out of it. My brother's literally just supporting Big Oil back in the day.
Right. So nice.
This is the start of Shell.
Right, this is global warming, like, start moment.
Exactly. Next adventure or character development moment. Gilgamesh rejects the advances of the goddess Ishtar due to her previous mistreatments of her lovers.
Wait, okay, sorry. The gods don't want to, like, intervene directly, but they are willing to, like, go fuck him, basically?
That's exactly the point with these gods in Sumer where I say they're on some other crack.
Right.
There are stories, if you read the whole strip, when sometimes they're like, I hate humans, they all must die. And then somebody makes a deal and they get saved. And other time they're like, but look at this, they need help. We will send you the, like, I don't know, the nut of the heaven. And it's gonna grow the biggest tree ever. And sometimes the way they talk is just like, if you do this, let's make a deal. And you will have 3.5 children afterwards. It's like the most weirdest numbers they get out of it. It's just, what the
okay.
Whoever came up with this must have been the original fanfic writer or something.
Right.
Anyhow, so my brother Gilgamesh rejects Ishtar, the goddess, and he's gay! Spoiler alert! Anyhow, initially, it's fine, but Ishtar takes that as a personal insult. So she asks her father Anu, another god, to send the Bull of Heaven to avenge her. This is gods, exactly, right? You didn't fuck me, now you die.
Right.
And initially, daddy rejects his lovely daughter. But I guess it's true what they say about father-daughter relationships. As later, with a little bit of persuasion from Ishtar, Anu proposes a deal, and here comes the weird numbers. So the deal is, I give you the bull, but instead Uruk, the city-state in which Gilgamesh lives, suffers 7 years of famine. And at this point in the story, bear in mind, somehow Ishtar is like, I am interested in saving people, so I will provide you provisions for 7 years. So the deal was, you curse them for 7 years, as in, like, you don't give them provisions, but I will give them provisions and you give me the bull. I want to kill Gilgamesh with it, apparently, right?
Because that makes sense. Just let him die of a famine, then.
Yeah, exactly. And you would think, how can a man like Anu backtrack on his word like that? Because at first he was like, I'm not going to give you the bull. Apparently, the little persuasion, as I said before, is Ishtar threatened. And now it's going to get even weirder. Remember what I said about her being interested to save humanity? She
right.
threatened to raise an army of the dead so vast it would outnumber the living.
Okay.
So she would have wiped humanity anyways.
What a legend of consistency here.
True. And at that point, I personally do not know why bother with the 7-year thing, as the bull himself laid devastation to nature and man alike in its wake. I think they actually also, numbers, killed, like, he with his powers or something, opened, like, a hole in the ground, which swallowed 300 men instantly. The rivers, like, didn't flow because of the bull. The fields dried out. It's like this kind of shit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's just gods competing who's going to kill humanity.
Right.
However, in a turn of events, without any divine help, our Super Smash Bros, Gilgachad and Wild Hobo kill the ball and city rejoices. But
so,
as per usual.
Okay.
Yes, gone.
What's the point, people? It's like, oh, 7 years of famine, but this bull is also going to kill your ass. And it's like, nah, your bull is dead now. Like, this is just like a whole lot of bullshit.
I mean, it was all technically a vendetta against Gilgamesh, but Gilgabro just killed the bull.
Right. I love this. It's like, hey, you want to go out? Nah. All right, well, I'm going to fucking kill your whole city and you. Cheers. Hey, see you next time.
Thanks for the feedback. Appreciate it. As per usual, though, all is well until it isn't. The gods decide, once again the gods, that for killing Humbaba, the previous story before Ishtar, and some other demigods, one of the two Smash Bros must die.
Well, sorry, can I quickly interrupt? Because I thought that what's he called, the friend?
Enkidu?
He was sent to kill Gilgamesh, no?
No, that's the thing. This is also something I guess they kind of It's not explicitly ever stated he was there to... Like, it actually, the way the translation phrased it, it was like, the gods created Enkidu, a wild man, to humble Gilgamesh. So, humble can be interpreted as, you know, I'm gonna kill you and humble you in that way, basically.
Right.
Or I'm just gonna become more powerful than you, or in any other way that you can humble a man's ego.
Right. Okay. And now this plan has turned on them, basically.
Kind of. And, by the way, another... So the dice rolls, gods decide that one must die, and our boy Enkidu takes a massive L. Just, well, like, they create them and they kill him.
I mean, shout out, you know, to the boy.
And leaves his homie Gilgamesh weeping and devoid of joy.
Right.
And this is true. There's a whole tablet where Gilgamesh goes into the wild, leaves city of Uruk, leaves a regent in his stead with instructions on how to govern, because he can't live without his Enkidu. Which is, I mean, it says that he's weeping for his friend, but...
I mean, his best buddy that he also happened to smooch on the lips sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. It's like homie love. So yeah, in his grief over his, you know, friend slash homie slash bro slash boy toy, Gilgamesh wanders the earth and starts fearing death.
Right.
Because he now understands, like, you know, this is a real thing. I've been this chat the whole time, but apparently you can just kick the bucket, am I right?
Right. It's possible to die. No, no, no.
Honestly, end of the world for some. So in other words, he decides to ask the gods for immortality.
Okay.
People, this should have been a video episode, because the amount of times I've seen Henry's, like, confused face.
I feel like every time I just get some information, then it's like, oh, random bullshit 180. Oh.
This is the best episode / worst episode to take notes on.
I mean, you know what my notes so far are? It's woolly mammoths. He kisses hairy animals. And making up true bullshit. That's my note so far. So.
Oh, yeah. And anyways. So his goal is now to reach Utnapishtim, who is one of the only known survivors of the great flood that killed all other men back in the day. Back in the day, Utnapishtim and his wife constructed the boat that saved all the animals on the field and... Wait.
Oh, it's the Ark of Noah.
Yeah, we have heard this supposedly fully original, a God stamp approved book, haven't we, right? Christians, all I'm saying, massive fucking L. Noah's Ark, my ass. Original story.
I mean, doesn't it just mean that everything comes from one place anyway?
Exactly. It's just, how can people nowadays say that this is the one true way? If you, like, look at, like, the Great Flood Genesis, or whatever that event is called, so many different beliefs or religions or faith, however you would call it, describe this event.
Right.
It's like, I mean, I guess what they would describe, if it's up to me, little side rant, fuck the flood, it was probably like the end of Ice Age. Polar, like, you know, the icebergs melting and whatnot. Of course, there was a lot of water, and people mistranslated it to said Great Flood or whatever, right?
Right.
I mean, I believe that people were still, like, at that point, it was still recent enough for people to know if something like that happened. Not, like, flood-wise, but there was a lot of water, or, like, suddenly it was very warm. And then nowadays, people are like, oh, the land was swept under the ocean! The Atlantis sunk! And Jesus rose from the maelstrom of it!
So true.
I haven't read the fan fiction. What is it called? Bible. Yeah, that one. Yeah, I haven't read it. Good so, one. Something like that.
Yeah.
Whatever the point is, that the couple had been granted immortality as a gift from the gods, as it turned out that the flood that happened due to this is some divine misunderstanding, and so as apology, the fuckers being the gods, got to walk the earth forever, and they were like, oh, we fucked this one person over, and he stayed alive, so grant him mortality too. Like him and his wife.
Right.
Okay. And Gilgamesh reaches them. And there was, they talk, and at some point, I think there's, like, more to the story, but the main point of it is that he gets told that immortality, he gets taught, rather, immortality takes out the meaning in life. We can only appreciate its beauty due to its non-lasting nature.
Okay.
Because apparently, I guess what he saw is that Utnapishtim is just a depressed man.
I mean, it makes sense, in a way.
Yeah, yeah. So, all in all, this story so far has been a Disney-worthy tale of getting humbled, finding and losing true love, and above all, personal growth and peace. However, the Epic of Gilgamesh, at least according to its final tablet, ends rather strangely. Gilgamesh returns to Uruk, where the site of its massive wall, so he's standing outside of Uruk, the city, right, where he used to govern. He stands outside the massive walls, and he looks at the walls, and he's like, you know what, that region did a good job, I should praise him. And that's where it ends. That's where the tablet ends. So, what after that? Did he just live a normal life?
Wait.
Did he go on to other adventures?
So he didn't return?
He stood outside the city's walls.
Okay.
Perhaps in a world full of magic and gods, you know, there would be a possibility of other unbelievable adventures. Whatever did happen seems to me, you know, lost time. So one could say that nothing was noted down about Gilgamesh from that point on. So, lemma here, if this is true, that is true, then the solution and conclusion, might I say, is, was Gilgamesh lost and never found again? This was exactly made to tie into this episode and, like, this podcast.
I see now. To make him a topic in the podcast, he has to be lost, in a sense. So,
I mean, he technically is. So tell me, what does this bear, this Chad, this homie, this twunk, this hunk?
I know exactly how the spaghetti slipped the plate. So, you said his buddy, right? He was a hairy,
Some
man.
Some people wanted to that.
So, he was at peace with himself at the end, question mark? Kinda-ish,
yeah,
sort
mean, okay,
of, in a way,
if you want the,
sense.
Like, the consensus of the story.
You don't.
This is not the resolution.
Yeah, okay.
But the story is believed to be an epic, or rather a poem, of personal growth.
Yes.
Something that, you know, this happened, that happened, and became a good person at the end.
Right. He was humbled, in a way. So, he was like, alright, I'm back in city-state, which name I don't remember, but, you know, I could still use a friend, you know, it gets lonely at the top sometimes, even when I'm so humble right now. I'm so cool and humble, but it gets lonely sometimes, right? So, looking for a new friend, he looks at the characteristics of his old buddy. Tall, muscly, hairy. So it's like, okay, I got my list now, my checklist.
Big tusks, please don't go that way.
Let's go find a friend. So he just goes wandering through the forest. And what's that? In the distance? Oh my god. It's a big hairy friend. So he walks up. Do you want to be my friend? And he gets fucking mauled to death because it's just a massive bear.
My Jigga Chad who killed demigods gets mauled by a bear in
the
end.
Right? He was aware for those fights, right? He was like, bull? Wrecked. I don't know. I was trying to look for a rhyme, but I couldn't really get much from that. But then it's like, oh, this could be a friend. My guard is down. Do you want to be my friend? You get it, right?
You should have got people seen how Henry depicted this. It was the most slapstick, perfect, like, description of anything with a puppet show in the end. I actually, unpopular opinion these days, but it has happened to know, it happened in the past, that I happen to know what actually happened.
Oh.
My gay senses are tingling.
Uh-huh.
In all the right spots. And if I know the gays, and if I know, because, I mean, listen, to me this story feels like there was the original lonely top. You know, a top as a sexual top.
Oh, Okay, I was thinking a mountaintop, like, unironically. I thought you were talking about a mountaintop.
A massive Chad, a bear, lowly. Saw the god, but he's not like, you know, I don't need anyone, as tops usually do. They don't like to admit that they're lonely. Their ego is like, ugh.
So true.
So the gods are like, we're gonna humble you. We're gonna make somebody who allegedly, by human standards, will be quite unbearable to look at, like a hairy yeti.
Ew.
But then when you get to know him, you shave off the hair and whatnot. It's the most beautiful twink ever. The OG twink. There you go. The bottom for your top. And of course, they fall in love and whatnot. And how should I put this lightly? The dick is good. It's really happening. Everything's happening. Love like blooms. Cause I mean, you know, gays love like nobody else. But we also get over things like nobody else. Cause so many times throughout our lives, you know, there's the occasional crush on a straight guy. There's a lot, and we're emotional, and you know, it's the end of the world. But then you look at us like a month later, and we're there, like, you know, I just fucked another man already. It's like fine.
Is that how it is?
Just bear with me.
Sure.
Right? So, So Enkidu dies because the gods are like, well, this fucking backfired. They did, he was happy and whatnot, so now let's kick him in the nuts, basically, and get his boy toy away.
Right.
They kill him, and he's devastated for a month, goes around and whatnot. And then he's like, wait. I mean, if I learned how to love this, right, who used to be a yeti, if you go around the city of Uruk, I mean, there's a lot. Because there's a lot of things that you can teach a man to be humbled down and whatnot. But an ego is something, telling from experience, something to get hard. Like, it's hard to get rid of. It's like, it's just there. It's always part of you. So here's a plan. What if I become immortal? And then I can just fuck things all day long, all night long, forever.
Right.
So he goes to that I already forgot the name, the depressed dude, and he's like, I mean, here's an argument. It's you and your wife that are immortal. Seems pretty clear to me what you've been doing this whole time. What else can you do? Because they're not living in Uruk. They're not living anywhere near civilization. They're actually living, I think, to the equivalent of like Garden of Eden or something like that. But not with the gods. They're just by themselves. Just the two of them. Right? So they're like, yeah, I know what you've been doing. Give me some of that. You know? Because I also want the joys of flesh. And they're like, yeah, nah. They're actually the original homophobes.
Huh? Why?
So my brother becomes depressed. And he's like, you know what? Well, I mean, what can I do? At some point, that's the real humbling of a man.
Meeting a homophobe.
Meeting a homophobe, but no, the real humbling of a gay person is to understand that they're not the center of the world, and then that the fucking is not everything there is in life.
Mm-hmm.
And that there is personality to people.
Oh, that's
so
crazy.
He goes back to City of Uruk, and he stands near the walls, and he's there like, well, it's time to take a new step. Time to become a different man. And he's about to take that step, his ego kicks in, and he's like, fuck no! Turns around, and I mean, I could tell you about the joys of flesh, what happened in other parts of the world from Gilgamesh later on, but my boy spread around. And that's the actual reason why you didn't know the story before, but you do the world Gilgamesh. Because my brother, you know, a name that like that, deeds of his get passed from mouth to mouth.
In a way, yeah.
Yeah. And you just don't forget that. And then it was too big of a story at some point. And the envious Christians were like, I'm fool this fuck guy. And that's why they're homophobic in the Bible or whatever. Because they're like, we're going to get everything that he stands for. Just get rid of it. Just never mention this dude again. But you can't stop love.
So true. And this was all an act of love is what you're saying.
He did love Enkidu. And he loved the world. He loved it so much he wanted to show it in specific ways.
Right. I don't know what to say to all of this. I guess so, King. Well, Rudy.
Or
let's
he
see.
Might have just, as it is usual to the big chads, he choked on a peanut or something.
That's his end. He comes home very fulfilled, like.
He was standing there, there was an olive tree growing. He's there, like, whilst thinking of what to say to the regent to praise against the building of the walls. He's like, you know, like just thinking, eating the olive and then just not thinking about it. Chokes on an olive, dies, just drops dead down there under a tree. And the gods are like, well, goddamn, we had like three other twinks lined up right now. Like, you know, it's like the next punishment sent. But look at him. Look at the bozo.
Yeah, that's the appropriate 180 turn in that story, honestly. But I thought you were going to be like, he's just standing there like, with mouth open. And then one drops in and he's like, Then he chokes on that.
Oh, yeah, true. All of the gods are, like, together, and they're like, how the fuck, like, he's proven to, like, outsmarted or outkilled anything we sent to him, or outfucked in the case of Enkidu. And then, it's like, what else? And there's another dude who's like, you know the thing where you're just playing with olives and, like, trying to get them in my mouth by, like, throwing them around? And he's, like, doing tricks with that, like, away from the other gods, and he misses one of the olives, throws it up in the air. Didn't catch it in his mouth, looks like, oh shit, that's gonna go far down. He's just standing like at the side of a cloud. And then, just as you said, Gilgamesh standing there with open mouth, just like thinking, like, and just perfectly in the middle, chokes on it and dies. And the guy looks back into the camera, fourth wall break, and he's like, they're never gonna believe this story.
And that's how television was created.
Exactly, Netflix original right there.
Oh, God. You want to go to the resolution, King, or should we...
You want to go to the next solution on your list?
The next solution on my list? Making up true bullshit. So, Gilgamesh was just sitting in his palace one day after being very fulfilled, like, let's go for a walk. So he goes for a walk, but then he decides, no, this is that 180 shit, let's not. So he stays inside again. Right? That's crazy. That's that unexpected angle. Right? He stays inside. He just goes lie down in his bed, right? But what happens next? His bed opens up. It's a trap door. Right? He falls down. Right? But there's cushions on the bottom, so he doesn't get hurt.
There's always that 180 shit.
Exactly. And then you think there would be Satan, but there's actually, I don't know, the Babylonian equivalent of, like, the best god, like the friendliest one, that's like, hey, they sit him down at a table, but there's no chairs, so he doesn't actually sit. See, you gotta stay on your toes, right? And he tells him, hey, Gilgamesh, it's time to bring back that chaos, King. It's time to get rowdy back in here. Fulfillment and humbleness is not for you, right? So he takes the trampoline back up the trapdoor. Opens the cover from his bed. There was no trapdoor all along. Was this a dream?
So was this how it was hearing my story? Because now I'm also like, this is like the most, like the most what shit?
And he goes to his military advisors and says, lads and lasses, it's time for peace by war. See? We get it really back and forth here. So what they do is this, they conquer everyone else around them. And now that everything is in the city-state of... Rudy, say the name.
Uruk.
There is peace in the world. And I guess a rock falls on his head someday. There you go. Just to really tie it all in. Thoughts?
A good solid 7 out of 5.
Thank you.
Just to give that 180 shit, you know?
That's that unexpected twist the entire time.
Yeah. True. But the actual resolution is, in true 180 manner, none. Because even amongst historians, it still is debated whether Gilgamesh existed or was based on an actual ruler of the time, because there are some people who do believe like actual historians, that there are some evidence pointing that there was a king at the time named Gilgamesh. Obviously, the story was not true, or most of it. But there was a really good, like, at least the legacy of which was, you know, legendary. So they named this specific king to be legendary, and then they wrote all this stuff about him. But whatever the case, what does it matter if his deeds and journey till this day inspires us?
True. I mean, I think I could believe that he's real. Why not? It's just like the stories have probably been embellished a bit, you know? To, like, make the king seem
epic. I mean, I looked up, like, the facts that, like, would suggest that he is a real figure. They're not that far-stretched. Because he's depicted in a normal manner as other kings. Like, the records about him seem to be the same as for any other king at the time. And those are believed to be exist.
Exactly.
So why wouldn't he?
I don't...
It's just that he's the only one out of all of them that's been like this, you know... Like, they've been talked about this much.
Yeah, that has been, like, romanticized, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
Maybe it was just, like, he really just went out and kissed a bear, and then, like, his assistants were like, oh, fuck, how are we going to spin this to look good?
That's that 180 shit. They just got in a room in an evening, because they're all, like, stressed about this. Oh, fuck, how are we going to, like... I mean, we've been, like, he's been a bad king so far, right? And all the other city-states are kind of looking down on us, like, oh, well, just wait till they hear the wind of this. And then they're like, what if we just, like, you know, let's get drunk, let's get high all together, come up with the craziest of shit, because it loops around. You can make up a lie that's not believable. So everybody's like, haha, you lied. It's like, just make up a good lie, at least. Then you can, like, lie where it's believable, but, you know, at some point people are like, yeah, that can't be true. Or you can lie so much, you can spread the propaganda so much. God knows country's been doing that for ages now these days. That people just become so brainwashed, they believe whatever shit. So this is the outcome. And at some point, the guys, like, you know, imagine they came up with this when they were, like, you know, the advisors were, like, 20 or something. And their whole life, they've been drilling this in their city-state's brains, and everybody believes it. And they're, like, around the time they're 60, they're, like, at this point, we can do whatever the fuck we want. Let's see if this floats. And then just the Scots start coming up with the most weirdest shit. And the people are buying it, and it's, like, look at that dumbass. That worked, so let's order this.
It just keeps getting crazier and crazier.
And then he fucking rode the rainbow and spit it out at the same time. And he was like a perpetual loop.
Well, Rudy, thank you for this interesting episode.
I actually greatly enjoyed doing this. Also 2 hours before we recorded this.
Sometimes it just be like that, am I right?
It do be like that, yeah.
Alright, well, thank you everybody for listening. If you have something to say, then go the other way.
180.
Exactly. To thevagabonddilemma@gmail.com. So that's the full name of the show. Just to be clear, it's thevagabonddilemma@gmail.com. Or if you want a little bit more personal feedback,
then in a true 180 manner, go to OnlyFans.
Ayo. 000.
000. RUDYS 000. 3 zeros. Rudy's 3 zeros. Pay, and then we can talk.
So based.
In reality, that for Instagram, but not that you're gonna care anyways. I think under this episode there's a question that you can leave feedback to, but in a new Giga chat manner.
We don't care.
What do we care?
Yeah, exactly.
What do we care, right?
Hey, if you have feedback, take a hike, bud. See ya.
Honestly. We don't want you on our way, so take the highway.
So true. Alright, well, thank you everybody. Have a nice day. Bye bye.
Nice fucking.